And welcome back. No, our next guest is not James Bond, but we're going to be talking about James Bond-like kinds of things. The fear of terrorism is a worldwide issue, as we all know these days, and the headlines remind us daily that terrorist acts can happen anywhere at any time. But the fear is nothing new in this country. The longtime history of that concern will be brought to the fore starting this weekend when the Missouri History Museum unveils an exhibit titled Spies, Traitors, Saboteurs, Fear, and Freedom in America. It will show that St. Louis has been right in the middle of the issue for generations. And joining me to explain is Adam Kloppe, public historian with the Missouri History Museum. You don't look anything like James Bond.
Right, no. Well, I might take offense to that, but that's okay.
This is going to be one interesting exhibit.
It's a very interesting show. It comes to us from the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C.
Who knew there was a spy museum?
Right. And that museum is always one of the most popular museums in D.C. Their visitor numbers are always great. Visitors always have such great things to say about the exhibits they have there. And their exhibits are always very well reviewed in the press and things like that. So we're really privileged to be able to bring this exhibit to St. Louis, to the people of this region, so that they don't have to go to, you know, D.C. to be able to see the cool exhibits that get put on at the Spy Museum.
And it might be dangerous to go to D.C. these days. But people are afraid of such
things.
Yes,
that's true. I mean, well, and this exhibit, you know, one of the things that people are afraid of is terrorism, right? And that is exactly what this exhibit is about. You know, how did we get to where we are today? How did we get to the place where we are where terrorism is such a concern? And what you'll see when you go through this exhibit is that the concerns that we have over terrorism aren't anything new in America. This is something that's been going on in America since the very beginnings of the country, even if the people back then wouldn't have used terrorism to describe the events that they were living through.
Well, let me tell you something that I was thinking.
Sure.
They say that one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, right?
Absolutely.
Which, in my mind, makes the people who were involved in the Boston Tea Party terrorists in the view of the British at the time, correct?
There is ways that, you know, you can talk about different events as terrorism that perhaps, you know, in our history textbooks, people might not have labeled as terrorism. And we see this today when different events happen, you know. Oh, is this terrorism or is it, you know, a more run-of-the-mill kind of crime, right? This is a debate that we're having all the time. And that definition of terrorism is kind of fluid, even though there is one out there. And they bring up that exact point that you did in the exhibit itself, that one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter. So you're going to go through this show and you might say, well, that group of people, I wouldn't consider them terrorists necessarily. But for the people who lived through those events, they certainly felt terrorized by what was going on around them. So so it is. It's kind of a loose definition.
Let's talk about some of the early incidents that are going to be represented in the exhibit. Let's take the time of the founding of the country, the early days.
Sure. So the earliest event that's covered in the exhibit is the burning of Washington, D.C. in 1814. Mm-hmm. That's an event that's part of the War of 1812. And basically the backstory to that is, there, you know, during the war, the British had been sailing around in the Chesapeake Bay, burning all these small towns all over the Chesapeake. And there weren't a lot of U.S. forces in and around D.C., like regular military. They were all mostly up in the Canadian front, fighting in that front in the war. And so there's not a lot of troops. And eventually the British land and they're marching on D.C. with some help from some spies in America who are helping these troops find their way. And the Americans learn about this and they send out basically militiamen, untested militiamen, to fight against these seasoned British regulars. And the militiamen get routed. The British march into D.C. and everyone's afraid. Oh, my God, the British are coming. They're going to burn down everything in this town. So D.C. is evacuated. And the British do burn down the White House and the Capitol building. The Americans actually set fire to their own Navy Yard to stop the British from getting the supplies that are there. But this is a very early incident in American history where people are concerned about violence that's being done with help from enemies within our own borders at that time.
How is this represented in the exhibit? I mean, is it not photographs, but artists rendering, that sort of thing?
So this particular section of the exhibit, they built a sort of fake room that looks like it's a room in the White House. It's got burn marks on it. The windows look like there's fire behind them. There's dishes that are smashed up on the ground because part of that story is that the president had his chefs and whoever make a meal and set the table so that when he came back later that day, he could have dinner. And then he had to leave. He never got back to the White House from where he was. So when the British came in, they ate all the food that was on the table and smashed up the plates and burned the place. But, you know, all of the different sections of this exhibit have these different kind of environmental elements. There's a part of the exhibit that talks about German spies and saboteurs operating in the United States during World War I that's represented with all these sort of fake crates of munitions that look like they've been burned up. So,
and we can bring St. Louis into the conversation at this point because there's a lot of nervousness, I know, particularly in World War I, about the German population.
Absolutely. And so, you know, this show, like I said, it comes to us from the Spy Museum. And so you're not going to see the word St. Louis on a whole lot of the labels, but we do have these incredible stories here in St. Louis that touch on these issues. Like you just mentioned, during World War I, there were intense fears about potential German sabotage in and around St. Louis. And by 1917, there were actually restricted zones set up in and around St. Louis where German immigrants were not allowed to be or not allowed to work around military installations and places like this. Germans couldn't live there. They needed special permits to be able to work at other places in these restricted zones. And that anti-German hysteria in and around the city fuels this, right? So there's this story about German saboteurs operating in the United States in this exhibit, and the hysteria that causes. And then we can see reflections of that in St. Louis. And while we didn't do a local component to this exhibit, we will be telling a lot of those stories on our blog, historyhappenshere.org, and then in programming around the exhibit.
And history repeated itself in 1941 after the attack on Pearl Harbor when Japanese were rounded up and put in camps.
And that's a part of this exhibit, too. They talk about the story of the attack on Niihau Island, which is this little-known incident that's kind of related to Pearl Harbor, where a Japanese fighter pilot crashes on the nearby island of Niihau. And he's arrested, and he escapes with the help of a resident. And they spend a few days sort of terrorizing the island. They're committing acts of violence around the island. Eventually, they're caught, and one is killed, and one kills himself once it's apparent that he's going to get caught. But they use this to talk about how there are these fears of, you know, potential Japanese spies and sabotage in America at the time and how that leads to this real overreach in terms of the Japanese internment. So that's part of this exhibit, too, where we talk about that balance between freedom and security.
I was just going to say that both of these situations that you just alluded to here raise some very interesting and provocative civil rights issues.
They absolutely do. And we can see it today, when we talk about terrorist incidents and the different ways that people talk about how we need to combat terrorism, we're still having these discussions about what's appropriate for security and what's appropriate for civil rights, and how do we strike this balance between the two things? And terrorist incidents bring that up in a new way. And I think what this exhibit does really well is it shows that those debates have been happening for a very, very, very long time.
We've talked a lot about terrorists and terrorism, mm-hmm. but other parts of the title of the exhibit imply spies and saboteurs.
Yeah.
A lot of activity in this country involving these categories over the years?
Sure. So there's one part of the exhibit that talks explicitly about the fears about Soviet spies operating in the United States during the Cold War. And in that part of the exhibit, you can go through and see, you know, what kinds of files the FBI was keeping on celebrities at the time. You can see what kind of files they were keeping on Josephine Baker and Lucille Ball and Pablo Picasso and all these people that the government and people at large really had fears were communist infiltrators that were trying to bring down America from within. And there's also, and you can see those sort of public fears reflected in a video that is playing in the exhibit. It's a video from the 1950s made by the Department of Defense called The Commies Are Coming. And it's about a man who goes to sleep and has a dream that communists have come in and taken over his town and are sending his kids to work camps and has banned his church and things like that. So you can really see those fears from the time reflected in the media from the time.
Julius and Ethel Rosenberg portrayed in any way, but they were executed for spies.
They were executed for being spies. I know they're mentioned in the exhibit, but they're not a focus necessarily.
Yeah. Let's go back just a little bit,
sure.
If we can backtrack a little bit, because I think the period between 1814 mm-hmm. and 1900, of course, involved the Civil War and the lead up to that. And I have to imagine that was a hotbed of activity because of the emotions of the time.
Right. And so one of the things that gets brought up in the exhibit is the formation of the Ku Klux Klan
yeah.
in 1866, right? And the ways that the KKK used violence to try to enforce their worldview, to try to exclude people from the sort of body politic of the United States after the Civil War. Not just African Americans, mm-hmm. though certainly African Americans bore the brunt of that, but also immigrants and Catholics and various groups. So they do talk about, you know, how that sort of – how something that we would think of today as terrorism – was being used during this time period, even if, like I said before, the people who were living through that time might not have used the word terrorism to describe it.
Is there a differentiation in any way between events that happened in a non-wartime environment? What I'm thinking of is Quantrill's Raiders used during the Civil War. I mean, that was part of the wartime operation, Absolutely. But there was a very clear terrorist element to that as well.
Yeah, and the exhibit doesn't try to make that differentiation too heavily. Like I said before, you know, there's elements in here that talk about World War II and World War I and the War of 1812. And the argument that they're making is that the people who lived through those events, like I said, certainly felt terrorized by them. And for the most part, the people that they're describing are civilians who are being affected by these things. So for those people, they were certainly terrorized by those events. So for them, the distinction between whether that's terrorism or an act of war that is slightly more academic of a debate didn't matter as much to the people who had to live through it.
A friend of ours here at St. Louis Public Radio, former writer for The Beacon and The Post-Dispatch, Rob Koenig, wrote a book a few years ago called The Four Horsemen. And that told of his World War I era story, not fiction, this is a true story, about how German saboteurs were doing what they could to destroy the Missouri mule population because they were used so heavily in World War I to carry equipment and to pull loads and that sort of thing. And this was considered the first real terrorist act from another country in this country. Into that at all?
That is really, really fascinating. I don't actually know that much about that story. But certainly, you know, this exhibit talks about those German saboteurs that are operating in America. And one of the big things that they cover, one of the big events they cover that happens during that time is the explosion of a munitions depot in the New York Harbor called Black Tom Island. And these German saboteurs placed little cigar bombs that are essentially, you know, time release. They dissolve this metal piece that's separating an acid from a reactant, and then they start a fire. So they set off these bombs at this munitions depot, and they start these little fires, and eventually that starts setting off explosions. And these go off, and they rock the entire island of Manhattan all night. Like, there's glass falling out of windows. There's people falling out of their beds. Luckily, this happens late at night. There's not too many casualties. But it does tens of millions of dollars of damage, and it so damages the Statue of Liberty's torch that that's still the reason that people can't visit it, is this explosion that happens because of an act of sabotage in 1916.
Now, how is this represented?
Well, that's part of the World War I section of the exhibit. Yeah. So they have little replicas of the types of bombs that the German saboteurs would have used. They have crates that look like they would be holding munitions that look like they're burned. And they have photographs of some of the spies that were operating at this time out of the German embassy in Washington, D.C., because the U.S. still has ties with Germany at this point. So, you know, it's – and then there's little videos too. The Spy Museum also produced a short, like, minute-and-a-half-long video that helps tell the story of Black Tom Island for visitors who are more inclined to see that. So there's all sorts of different ways that visitors can interact with that information. And then – after that, there's also interactive poll questions. So once you learn everything about Black Tom Island and German saboteurs, you're asked a question about what the U.S. should do with spies that they capture. And you can answer whether you agree or disagree. You can see how other people voted, and you can see the results of a historic poll, how people in the past would have responded to a similar question. So you can really see how these opinions have changed or not changed over time.
How do you deal with the issue of spies? Because unless a spy is caught, you generally don't know who they are, where they are, or whether they were there at all.
That's right. You know, and I think that makes some of the subject matter here kind of hard to deal with, right? Because it's, like you said, it's hard to find these people. Some of that information ends up being classified in a lot of ways. But, you know, we can still represent the ways that people felt panic over the threat of espionage, panic over the threat of terror that was around them and stuff like that. So even if there are things that are still kind of classified or hard to get at, we can still talk about the general climate of fear that surrounded these events.
What about today? How much into the modern era does the exhibit go?
Sure. So the last moment in the exhibit is the terror attacks of September 11th, 2001. And that is, there's a 8 minute long or so video there that tells that story. There's pieces of one of the planes that hit one of the towers in New York. There's a copy of the 9/11 Commission report. And so this exhibit was actually completed in 2004. It opened and it's been touring for about a decade now, actually. So that's the last part of the exhibit that's built out that really talks about terror. But then there is panels at the end that talk about the Boston Marathon bombing. There's a clip or a bulletin board, excuse me, at the end that has clippings from newspapers, various headlines about more recent terror events and stuff like that, so that people can see that these events, you know, they don't end with 9/11 where the show ends. And, you know, I think most people are aware of that when they come to the show, too.
I saw in some of the notes, and I'm not sure it's part of your exhibit, but that there was a mention of the situation at Washington University during the Vietnam War, in which students attempted to burn down the ROTC building.
Yeah, and that's not actually part of the exhibit, but it does point toward a part of the exhibit. So part of the exhibit talks about that moment in the late 60s and very early 1970s where the protest movements of the 60s turned violent, and groups like the Weather Underground and the BLA emerged that are more committed to using violence to bring about social change than the broader protest movements of the 60s had been. And the ROTC burning is sort of an early indication of the way that those protest movements had turned violent. And then, of course, the Weather is involved with bombings, and the BLA is targeting police officers and things like this.
And the civil rights movement spawned some organizations that I suppose some might consider to have been terrorist groups.
That's not really covered in the exhibit, no. But, you know, there's Like we were talking about before, there are various ways that one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, the people in the Weather Underground, and some of them are still alive, they don't consider themselves to have been terrorists. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do consider them to be terrorists. So that's a great example of that kind of debate that people have. What is terrorism? Who is a terrorist?
Definition has changed. You indicated earlier that definitions of these things have changed over the years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they change with nearly every event that occurs. People have new definitions of what terrorism means, and law enforcement responds in new ways. They recognize that there might be gaps in the sort of security apparatus that they could try to tighten up and catch potential terrorists. And then, you know, sometimes they go too far. We've talked about some of those moments with the internment of the Japanese Americans during World War II. There's a moment in the teens when the anarchists are bombing various Justice Department officials and courts and things like that in the United States, that the U.S. Justice Department institutes these things called Palmer raids, where they're essentially rounding up immigrants that they suspect of having ties to anarchy or communism, and deporting them. Oftentimes, these people had done nothing wrong, but that was their solution to the problem. And other people said, well, you've gone too far. And actually, the ACLU is created out of that exact context. So there's this constant push and pull that's happening.
There have been times, clearly, and I'm sure that it will become clear at the exhibit, where there have been times of national hysteria. We may be in one of those times right now.
Yeah, and the exhibit talks about that kind of hysteria that exists. And, you know, we talked about that that moment in World War II with Japanese internment. We can talk about the 1950s with the sort of hysteria over communism. You know, there were communist spies operating in the United States in the 1950s, obviously. But McCarthyism, you know, the McCarthyism that comes out of that is a moment of hysteria and panic perhaps takes that security apparatus too far and takes that climate of fear and tries to manipulate it towards political ends.
Was that time probably I'm having a hard time finding the words to describe it. I'm thinking, is there a peak period of time, either for hysteria or when there was a lot of activity going on with regard to either terrorism or spying or what have you?
You know, I don't know that there's necessarily a peak time or a time that we can point to. And I think what this exhibit does is it shows that you know, we consider ourselves to be living in this peak time of the threat of terrorism and everything like that. But that is not anything new. We can go back all the way to 1814 and talk about that. We can talk about, like you mentioned, the Quantrill raids, things like that as terrorism, things that aren't in the exhibit as terrorism. So this is something that we've been dealing with for a long time. And there's always been this sort of fear about, are we secure enough? And a fear over, are liberties protected enough, right? So, yeah, I don't know that there's necessarily peaks and valleys. I think it's something that's been with us for a really long time.
We have an email here. I'll just mention it very briefly because time's getting away. There was a German prisoner of war camp south of St. Louis and also over in the Belleville area, from what I understand, in World War II. Any indication that there was any activity associated with the prisoners, some of whom escaped?
Well, they don't necessarily mention that, but there is mention in the exhibit of the German-American Bund and sort of Nazis in America during World War II. People in the United States who were sympathetic to the Nazi cause, and there was real fear that those folks might be trying to undermine the American war effort during World War II.
Sounds fascinating. I can't wait to see it. We'll tell everyone that Adam Kloppe's exhibit is going to be opening on February 6th, Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Spies, Traitors, Saboteurs, Fear and Freedom in America runs from the 6th of February to the 8th of May at the Missouri History Museum. Sounds like a lot of fun and most interesting and very educational.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me, Don.
Great to see you again. Thanks for being with us. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about efforts to address the issues of heroin and opiate addiction and overdoses. We'll also hear contributor Steve Potter's conversation with Bobby Norfolk about his new memoir detailing his award-winning storytelling career. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.